This is for all the girls who grew up without strong geek role models to help them discover their geek dreams.
For everyone who's ever been quizzed about their video game knowledge because girls don't play games.
Geek Hearing is working to bring female-identifying geeks into their prime to be the role models, dreams, and voices.
About to show these boys how we do it.
Higher, further, faster, baby.
It's not about deserve.
I'm not an owl!
A girl has no name. There is something supernatural at work here.
It's about what you believe.
Did I step on your mom?
The Guardian Leviosa.
Now on, you do as I tell you.
May the odds be ever in your favor.
Are you ready for this?
Are you ready for this?
Welcome to Geek Herring, a critical geek culture podcast where we talk the good and the bad parts of being a chick in a male-dominated environment. Hi, I'm Amanda, and with me today is my awesome, hilarious, wonderful, and definitely affected by Mercury retrograde co-host, Monica. Hey, Monica.
Hey, Amanda. Yes, affected by Mercury retrograde. Tech is faring quite well with me still, so that's fine. But yeah, everything else is a bit wonky. Yeah,
this Mercury retrograde is definitely about your relationships and your communication. So like not yours specifically,
great.
That's what the porn is kind of indicative of. So
I also last night we had a communication error, quite literally, with a weirdo or two.
There you go.
That makes so when did it start, did you say?
Last night at 9:05 Eastern time. But we were kind of feeling the effects all day yesterday, as far as I know. And then it's lasting for 3 or 4 weeks.
Fucking Mercury can stop retrograding and all that. Always blame Mercury. Exactly.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
How are you doing over there in the Canadians?
I'm okay. I have a sore throat.
Okay, it's good.
And I was just describing in pre-show about my sleep interruption because of a dream spider. So I'm feeling like quite low energy today. but I'm really excited to talk about this topic.
Yes, because we loved it and it's amazing. And we talk about Enola fucking Holmes. That's not actually what the series is called or the movie is called. It should be. Yes, it should be. It's just called Enola Holmes and it's on Netflix since September the 23rd.
Yes, starring our favorite Millie Bobby Brown and our pal Henry Cavill.
Oh, pal?
Our pal.
You call him pal?
He's my pal, my old friend.
The one and only Henry Cavill.
Mm-hmm.
And also the amazing Helena Bonham Carter, who is just also epic.
Phenomenal.
Love her.
And the guy that played Mycroft, whose name I can't remember.
I have Wiki open. It's Sam Kelflin.
Oh yeah,
is that him actually? Wow, he looks so different on that image. That wow, he's what? Is that him? Sorry, I'm just Wikipediaing this, and you should all too, because he's actually really good looking and all that. Let me just. It is Mycroft Holmes.
There
wow,
you go. Is it
and
actually?
He's also born in 86.
Oh, he's same
but
age.
But I have
as
to get
then.
Used. I have to get used to the fact that actors are now definitely all younger than me.
Well, so I watched Enola Holmes after I told my parents that I needed to watch it because I was recording Geek Herring, and Dad put it on like, I think it was September 23rd, maybe September 24th. So it was a couple weeks ago that I've watched it and we all quite enjoyed it for the most part.
For the most part means you or for the most part means your dad?
All of us. For the most part.
Okay. I'm curious where this goes. I also watched it. I think I woke up on the 23rd and I basically watched it in the morning because I was like, I'm doing this now or it's never going to happen. So that's what I did. And I really liked it. Like that, these are the movies where I'm so just generally so happy that movies like this are out now. And I'm constantly wondering what it would have done to my younger self or what it is doing now to girls in us at a certain age that they actually have movies like this that they can watch where it's the message in all of them is just I can be my own, I can grow my own, I can do my own, and I can rule this fucking world on my fucking own. That's why it's Enola fucking Holmes.
It definitely has that like empowering girl power, like fuck yeah vibes. Like I've felt it through the whole thing. And yeah, it was definitely definitely enjoyable, like pretty much right from the first few scenes, like with Enola growing up with her mom, who was played by Helena Bonham Carter, and like such an unconventional upbringing for the time, like the what was it, set in like the early 1900s,
whenever Victorian times, isn't it?
Yeah, Victorian times,
something so like that.
1800s. I don't know the exact year, but it was kind of an unconventional upbringing for the time period, where, you know, women were supposed to, or young girls were supposed to be like seen and not heard, go to boarding school, learn how to be proper young ladies, and yet Enola is learning how to sword fight and do archery and fight and like all of the things that, you know, proper young women aren't supposed to learn how to do, because, well, it's not proper, it's not womanly, and it's something that the boys should do. And her mom's like, no, that's not going to work.
That is, yeah. I love that. That go-edit in general, that she's just, and her mother is already one who's saying like, who's not giving any fucks about what other people say, and who knows that how she raises her daughter is exactly how, what the daughter needs and what is necessary and all that. So that was just really inspiring to see. And also the reactions of everyone around them was just pretty, like, it's funny, but also in a way from the point of view now, it's just also a bit pathetic that, she needs to wear gloves and she needs to wear a hat and all that. And she's just like, whatever, that itches. I don't give a shit and I don't have gloves. So that's pretty, questioning the status quo of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And automatically also questioning the current status quo in a way is just nice that does that as well in somehow.
Yeah, there is definitely a lot of full circle moments when it's like, okay, so this movie might be set in Victorian times, but... hello, this is still relevant. So it's like infuriating also, because it's like, wow, things haven't changed that much. Like, they've changed, but really not that much, like in terms of how a lot of men feel that women should portray themselves in our current society.
Yeah. I mean, I think we then also need to get back on what Professor Talib said a while, so it might seem to us that it's not a lot, but actually it is really, it is a lot. And it's also kind of not really the real prediction of Victorian times, because even though the relationship that was going on then in the movie seemed to be more modern and all that, that still doesn't mean that that was something that has actually happened. So I think it's a nice homage to the times with a twist of 2020, which probably still... and we still got, we're not at the bestest of places, but we're already at a pretty good place compared to 20, 30, 40 years ago. And even 200 years ago, when was Victorian times? 1700 something?
No, 1800s.
Queen Victoria was 1837 to 1901. So it's basically the 19th century.
Indeed. So yeah, like on the surface, I think, and most, like throughout most of it, this has a really strong feminist message, like showing girls that you can be and do anything you want to and stuff traditions and, you know, be your own goddamn badass fucking self. And like, yeah, I think it really does drive that message home in a lot of ways. For me personally, I think it could have done without the lame love story.
Yeah.
I feel like, and I'm going to reference our friend Mel, has a blog now called Nerd Speech, and she wrote an article on Enola Holmes. And I'm going to reference that because I really did agree with what she said when she said that Enola Holmes, like almost every time, like she built up to be this strong, badass woman. And then she was introduced to this love interest again. And I do feel that in a way, like it wasn't always like over of always in your favor. It was kind of in the way of like the Enola Holmes was actually the savior instead of the guy being the savior. But at the same time, it was like, it could have, like the story could have been without him. Like it felt like
I agree with that.
Detract from the overall theme of Enola Holmes being the baddest bitch.
while I found this cute, like, this because I do like me sometimes some love stories, oh, I do yeah. find them cute when they happen. I also think it was unnecessary and took away from her story in a way. Though I feel it was also a bit, like, it was nice and, well, what I find, what they brought back together so interestingly, which probably would have also been able, would have also been possible without the love interest situation, is that considering they wanted to, I think so, and this is now spoiler territory, so if you have not watched the movie, because all the other things we've said so far, they were basically kind of also something that you could have read from the trailer if you've watched it. But what I'm going to say now is not in the trailer. Because she found out that her mother, or at least I think it was a point at the suffragettes movements in a way, like, or at some feminist
It was movement. Gearing up for the women's right to vote.
Yeah, it was gearing up for the women's right to vote, and they had an organization, and the way I understood it in the movie was that, or maybe, and I still could be possible that that's not what it intended to be, but the way I understood it was that they were actually arming themselves with bombs and all that to have like a proper, not war, but a proper violent riot.
Mm-hmm.
And then by whatever, what Enola did and how Enola then kind of, made sure that the guy, which then turned out to be her love interest and throughout the story, that he got to the place to vote there. That's what made the change and not the violence made the change, which I found really nice. That this is the, because it gives a bit of a, it doesn't always have to be violent, and I don't mean that it doesn't necessarily can be or has to be violent, but it can also happen without violence and voting matters. I think that was the message that I got from the movie. And you sometimes think there is only one way out, but it's often smaller things that make the difference. And in that way, she kind of, by what she did and how she protected and resolved all of the crime around him, whose name I already forgot. Basically solved the problem. Well, solved the problem, or was the main issue why women's votes, the vote for women was put into place then. And that's something I really found super interesting, that it showed that move of it also being the smallest things can make a difference and one vote matters in a way. That's what I took away from it. And I found that, on the other hand, pretty interesting then.
Yeah, the women's right movement in London in the 1800s was, you know, I think that was kind of the precursor to first wave feminism. Was before that really became a thing in America, but it was the foundation of the entire feminist movement, really. And it was those women that were campaigning to bring the women's right to vote that, you know, changed the course of history. The story had that, you know, there was the threat against Tewkesbury to murder him because he would have been the lord to... like one lord that needed to put the vote over, and his family didn't want any change and all of this, blah, 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 blah. Which I also found interesting, actually, was it that it was the grandmother that was kind of the mastermind behind all that. I was like, dude.
What do you mean? What do you mean?
The grandmother being like the driving force behind the assassination plot for her grandson. It just shows that women can like uphold the patriarchy and be resistant to change as well. But it was still like, come on. In a way,
you think so?
Yeah, a wee bit. I was like, oh, so okay. it would just, I don't know, it kind of pissed me off that it was her, because like, okay, it's a woman imparting violence against her family. Like, she killed her son, she's got a plot to kill her grandson also, the women can't get the right to vote. It was just kind of like, oh, all right. It pissed me off that it was a woman masterminding it all to like stop the progress.
Why
not?
I mean, because as you said, women can also be the ones It can be the mastermind.
But it was like, I don't know. Like, it just pissed me off.
Would it, it did the fact that it was the grandmother, or that somebody plotted against it in general?
That it was the grandmother. That, like, she was just an evil old lady who didn't, that she was murdering her family and, like, was behind in progress.
Would it piss you less if it were a man? I don't get it.
Yeah, I think so. I don't ask me why, but why? I don't ask me why.
because we're used to men being masterminds and women are not?
No, it's not even about that. It just pisses me off that they chose a woman to be the ultimate villain to uphold the patriarchy. But then maybe that's a social, like, a commentary on social, on society, because, like, women can be, like, our own worst enemies, and women are part of the biggest reason that the patriarchy still exists.
Yeah, I don't think for me, it's mainly that it just shows that we're not, like, yes, we're victims, but we're also perpetuators, and generally, I'm not the biggest fan of the victim mentality. So like, I can't do anything about anything because I have this and that and all that happening against me. And yes, I know that that's obviously, of course, it's a structural problem and that this has a bigger fight to fight. But that doesn't mean that we can't take responsibility for change. And also, that doesn't mean that we don't play a part in it as well, because none of our hands are free from blood. No, that was too. I was thinking of a very, very religious connection, but I couldn't figure the words out anymore. So forget about that. But I don't remember what the thing. Never
it's
mind.
Okay. I know what you mean, though. It's like none of us are like, are all of us are complicit in some way of upholding the patriarchy, yeah. But we're also complicit in taking it down.
Yes.
Unless that's why. Yeah. But I mean, I enjoyed the overall theme of the movie. I thought it was entertaining, and I thought that all of the actors were phenomenal, yeah. Especially Millie Bobby Brown, like, playing Enola Holmes. It was like that role was made for her. She was perfect.
Yeah. The two together, Helena Bonham Carter and Millie Bobby Brown, they're just a perfect combo.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what you want. That's exactly, and we've said it before, that's exactly what you think Helena Bonham Carter's relationship to her daughter was like, if she would actually have one. Oh, that's interesting. We have Ollie in chat, and he mentioned that he absolutely hated Enola Holmes. Why, Ollie?
Yes, tell us.
You can write that while we keep talking about it. And that's what you would think her relationship with her daughter would be like, and mm-hmm. they were just like this great combo who totally added on each other in a way, like in the relationship as well. It made such a great it was such a great relationship. And I also love that kind of Sherlock came around in a way, but mm-hmm. that's also because it's Henry Cavill, and
Henry Cavill, and we're biased, but also, like, I feel like the character of Sherlock was amused by his sister's disregard for the conventional patriarchy and the rules, yeah. and everything. And he was just like, oh, let her be, kind of thing. And he just found that amusement. And yeah, okay, that does stand with what we know of Sherlock's character, like from the books and from other adaptations, mm-hmm. like especially the Robert Downey Jr. adaptation of Sherlock. I actually watched the sequel of that one last week with Dad as well, because he was like, oh, let's watch mm-hmm. Sherlock Holmes. And I'm like, okay. And like, he is this like cheeky kind of character who does have a soft spot for women breaking the rules. And I feel like it is part of his character. So it did make a lot of sense that he nurtured Enola in that way as well. Whereas Mycroft is always the more stuffy, uphold the traditional
value. Yeah, I mean, that's always like in all of the, versions of Sherlock, Mycroft is a bit of a suck up, stick up his ass person. Whereas mm-hmm. Sherlock is just like, I'm going to do my own shit and all that. So I approve. I think that too. And I actually do think that, and that's what at least what it seemed to me is that, but that could also be just super projection because Henry Cavill is Henry Cavill, that It was more for him than just, oh, look at her being breaking the rules, haha, but also some kind of pride that she figured, like, she has the same skills as he, or even sometimes even better skills than he has. So this kind of look at her and helping her in a way to even nurture that a bit more, because he put her on a path a bit as well, to not discourage her but more encourage her to do more stuff and bring her more clues and all that. So
it's interesting that you bring that up, because I feel like with Eudoria Holmes, like everyone's mother, the mother that, like, played by Helena Bonham Carter, she obviously brought up Sherlock in much the same mindset of, like, being inquisitory and training him to do everything else, like in terms of investigations and being tough and having a bit of fighting spirit and everything. She's brought Enola up the same way. So of course Sherlock is going to be like, yeah, well, this makes sense, is what our mother has trained her daughter to do. But somewhere along the lines, like, Mycroft just got stuck in the mud.
Yeah, but I mean, there's always one of those, right?
True.
So there's always one weird, especially, isn't Mycroft the older one? Just an assumption.
I think so, yeah. So maybe Eudoria.
Born, yeah, that and also sometimes even though family teaches you one thing doesn't necessarily mean you can't walk another way.
Now, I know that Anna in our Discord was also saying about the portrayal of corsets in this film was just kind of perpetuating a negative stereotype, because corsets weren't actually made to be like restraints and uncomfortable. They were just basically a Victorian bra. They weren't designed to train your waist or break your back or cause you not to breathe and like all this. And I've seen actually a lot on Instagram about corsets lately as well. Like, it seems to have, I don't know if it's just a coincidence or if it's actually just become a discussion like on Instagram or anything. So it was a little bit disappointing. I totally see that from their perspective, like, you know, historical clothing experts, that, you know, it kind of sucks that they have had that stereotype in this film as well.
Yeah. I can see that. Like, I can see that it's annoying, especially when you know the history of corsets and all that, but the general understanding of, not the general understanding, but the general opinion of corsets and how they have been used since then, and especially in nowadays, considering everything is about constraint and making you slimmer and not making you show any fat. So that's just so out of this historical understanding of what a corset was that just gets absolutely lost in translation. And I think in these moments, the movie effect is just one that is more important than, or the theatrical effect is more important than the historical
value,
accuracy. Yes,
value. Yeah, for sure. And like, I think that, yes, okay, the film did bring up about like corsets being restrained, basically. It also, like, when that scene with Enola, like, getting changed into this, like, proper young lady wearing, like, the dress and all, it did show her getting, like, in the shapewear as well, like, the bit that chaps onto her, or tape attaches to her bum, basically, to, like, give her, like, hips and, like, shape the body. Like, it wasn't just about, you know, training a waist or making a waist appear smaller because of the corset. It was also the puffiness around the hips and lifting up the breasts and like making a body more than it was, because I think that a lot of Victorian culture was shaping the body to look like
more rounded
and fuller for society standards, even when like a woman maybe didn't have those curves and features.
And Ollie says in chat that corsets are too sexualized nowadays, and for them to be included, too sexualized and too viewed upon as a dieting or body changing item, which I totally agree. And I mean, that's also, that was, I mean, when the Beauty and the Beast came out and Emma Watson decided to deliberately not wear a corset in the Beauty and the Beast, that just shows it now how much it is used to exactly that extent to have the body look a certain way when it doesn't, and not necessarily just as a bra.
But yeah, I mean, overall, like, I think that it's fun to reimagine Victorian era outfits and costume and dress, like, with somebody like Enola Holmes in mind as well, who can, for example, use the garter belt to hold her knives or like slide a knife down the side of her boot or like use it to hide like all of the ways that she can beat your ass, essentially, behind this woman's exterior. I did like that approach to it for sure.
Yeah. Can we also talk about how epic it is that we had this black female side role there, who was kind of the I don't know what she
Edith, played by Susan Wokoma, who was training women how to fight. Yes. And like owned a tea house, but it was upstairs and you could go and like be part of this secret women's organization to overthrow the patriarchy. And like, it was really fucking badass, honestly.
Yeah, it was super fucking badass. And she had such an important role as a kind of messenger in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Like she was the one who held the knowledge.
Yeah, she really was kind of like the almost a mastermind behind the whole thing, like the organizer, the puppet master. Like, I don't know, there was a lot of power in her role. But I'm going to reference Mel's article again, because it's interesting, because black women, when the like right to vote came and was 1884, black women didn't also get the right to vote. It was only white women. So it is an interesting role that they've given to Erica as a black woman to have this kind of power in the organization, to then not receive the power after all the fight,
mm-hmm.
like the power of the vote.
Yeah. And that's all information that we didn't get from the movie, clearly, because how accurate is the movie? So it just seems like a nice roundup, but not the prediction, like not the actual presentation of what real history was back then, because I don't, was it even at the same time and all that? I don't think so. Same year?
Which part? Sorry?
Never mind.
So
it was clearly the same era.
Yeah, it was the same area, because the women's right to vote was around 1884. I'm going to say off the top of my head, I could be off by a couple of years, but it was definitely the 1880s, which is around the same time period that Enola Holmes is taking place. And it's what the organization that her mother belonged to and that Erica was kind of liaising was basically the organization, like the early suffragettes too. To do that. So it's interesting. And I'm not saying that it shouldn't have been a black woman, because I love the power that they gave that role. And like, she was just amazing in it. And she was really awesome. She was really hot and she was a really great fighter. And I loved it. Like, I just loved her character. Mm-hmm. But, and like Mel said in her article, I do wonder, you know, was it intentional that they've given that specific role to a black woman when black women were not given the right to vote?
Black women were always the ones who have been fighting for everyone's rights, and we're the last ones to always get them. Like, that's everything, they always get it the last, and still don't have all of the same rights as white women have. So that doesn't mean they never fought. They always fought. They were the first ones to fight, and they just never really received it. And I mean, black trans women were the ones who fought for LGBTQ rights and a lot of other rights, and they're still the last ones in the chain now, even though they were the first ones to stand in line and be like,
yeah, we need first this, to we need revolution,
yeah,
and the last to reap the reward of it. You're right. Yeah. So in that scenario, it actually makes perfect sense for Erica to be why do I keep calling her Erica for Edith the whole time? I've been calling her Erica, and her name is Edith. So yes, my brain is just as good as yours today.
Perfect.
So it does make perfect sense for her to be, played by a revolutionary woman who is at the forefront of revolution, but always the last to receive.
Yeah. I mean, maybe they should have added that while she was fighting, she still didn't receive it, because that's clearly not something that you figure out from the movie, and could have been an additional learning or something that they just point at, that while she was fighting, she didn't reap the rewards as much. Mm-hmm. But then it's also a Hollywood movie, kind of. How much education do we expect from that? We can already be kind of grateful to have strong female role models now in movies, and not just absolute the ones that... That doesn't mean that we didn't have strong female role models before, but just the fact that I sit there and watch this movie and think about the fact that if you take away the love story, that's one of the most empowering movies that I like one of the movies that you just happen to see that a lot of people would probably watch because Millie Bobby Brown is super successful now with all the people who watch Stranger Things. Henry Cavill is fucking successful because of The Witcher and because of Superman and because of all of that. And because of Henry Cavill and because he built the gaming computer and the hottest person on the planet while doing that. So it's like, all of these, a lot of people will probably watch this movie just because of the people that have been casted. And that already gives it a bigger platform than often other things. You would have needed to go and find movies with that powerful female force on the main stage, basically, before, like when I was growing up. So I think that's just a nice move. It's not where we wanted to be. Of course, we would have loved it to be different, but it's still Hollywood. And I don't know, some things just take fucking time, even though they shouldn't.
Yeah, I think for like all of the faults, which I think we've mentioned, probably most of them that I found, it's still a wonderful movie. It's still really empowering and I enjoyed it. I think it's as simple as that. Like, I really enjoyed this film and I got kind of those same vibes that I got the first time I watched Captain Marvel, like just that fierce pride welling up inside me. I was like, yes. Yeah. Like if I was a child watching this movie, like if I was 10, 11, 12 years old, it's like, yeah, I would feel inspired by this.
Yeah. I mean, I see what Mel is saying, that she thinks that most people don't see the issues with the movie. She enjoyed the movie, but it could have been more, but maybe Hollywood is not the right address for it. Yeah, I mean, the question is, how much can a movie do? Like, I think a movie can do very much. As we saw with Captain Marvel, the movie did a lot, and the movie had no romance in it, in a way. But then also, Wonder Woman also has romance in it. So it's a thing of, I think it's a Hollywood issue that they often combine romance with movies that have nothing to do with it in a way, or don't necessarily need to have anything to do with romance in a way, but it's because it sells.
Mm-hmm.
Like the way that sex sells, the way that romance sells. Yeah. And as Mel says, a lot of people want romance. So as I mentioned before, I wasn't hating it. I was like, yeah, we wouldn't have needed this, but I can get on board with it because it's cute. So, I was aware that it would have not been necessary, and it took a bit away from her as if she wasn't able to stand on her own, which she still did in most of the scenes. It's not that every woman needs a man to be complete, or needs a partner to be complete, or that every man needs a partner to be complete. But that's still something that, I think that's a different layer, even more to the feminist side of the movie. And I do think the feminist side of the movie is still something that we haven't seen as much before, and that we need to see more of, and that it needs to be more clear that maybe it's not always the people that need to change. Maybe it's the everybody else that needs changing, as she basically said in the film. Yeah, it's not an education. It's something that people, I think movies, and we talk about this all the time, like pop culture can really influence and does influence a lot where we are going. And despite not everybody will go ahead and read a feminist book, and not everybody will go ahead and read up on Black history, or read up on Black people's rights, or on Black Lives Matter and all of that. But the fact that these things are visible now and it become even more and more visible is just an important step. And we need to be aware that we can't go from 0 to 500 in 2 seconds and all is done and well with it. But it is a process, and I think we're in the middle of the process right now. And with more and more movies coming out, the next movie could be entirely different. And in 2 years, we're going to look back at this movie and are like, well, look at that one. That was one of the first ones that put us on that path that where we're going now. And that was Captain Marvel. That is the Wonder Woman movies. And that's also, for me, also part of it is also Enola Holmes, because I do think she's great. She's a young, strong woman, and I didn't have a young, strong woman like that anywhere on television when I was growing up. I had Joey from Dawson's Creek, who I liked, but she was also all about the boys. And there weren't that many strong, badass girls at 16.
Yeah.
Back then.
I definitely agree with everything that you said. And I also think that, like, I mean, we're open here to a sequel or maybe even an entire series, like take it out of the film realm and bring it into television. Like, I think that there's a lot that can be done with Enola Holmes with the same cast and crew that can, you know, take what the foundation of what this initial film has laid and expand on it, make it deeper, make it even more meaningful than this already is, and bring more history and more fiction and, you know, more enjoyment into it. I don't think that there's anything right now that is limiting the possibilities that can be taken with Enola Holmes. Plus the fact that this is a book series already by Nancy Springer, The Case of the Missing Marquess, the Enola Holmes mystery. So it looks like, you know, there's a whole series of books written by Nancy Springer that could be used as a jumping off point for more films, for a series would be amazing. Like, get on that. I would watch a shit out of an Enola Holmes series. Like, I think we get really deep into the characters, like way more than you can with the movie. But yeah, like on the whole, I think that there's a lot that can be done with this story, a lot that can be done with this character and this iteration of Sherlock Holmes as well, as like a nurturing kind of older brother figure who really does just encourage his sister to break society's rules.
I mean, he also breaks society's rules much. So.
Yeah.
So,
but it's more accepted because he's got a penis.
I know, he's got a penis. You said Willy. Mel says, even if the love story was annoying, she didn't live happily ever after with that Lord. Big plus. We don't That's know true. If she lives happily ever after. Is that what you said?
Like, she didn't end up with him.
Oh, there was no film. Well, like, we don't know.
Not at the end of this film. There's like, it's, she was just like, see you around kind of thing. Like, it's really open-ended.
Mel thinks she ditched him.
It's possible. We don't really
know. Oh, they were so cute in the end, though. They were quite cute. I'm sorry. I have a soft spot because he was also kind of adorable. He's such a dumb little boy and kind of adorable. Yeah. I know exactly what you mean. And I had the same feeling, but I'm easily swayed by romance. I'm like, it's really not necessary. And why do we need one now? Because that's not, she's looking for her mother and all that. And it's it's not you, it's me. That's what she said. Yeah, maybe. Maybe she just wants to find her own and then they can be together. Whatever. It doesn't really matter what happens with him afterwards. Yeah. No. And that's also kind of what it matters, what his role in history was, kind of. That's what we can get from that. And not whether or not they're a couple or not. They cared deeply for each other at a very young age and they were really adorable. And first love is always nice. Just gets annoying afterwards.
Touche. Touche.
But all in all, would recommend.
I would recommend it. I was going to say, like, my final thought is, like, just watch the film. Because it's good. It's enjoyable. Even with all its maybe historical inaccuracies or problems. But don't watch it for that. Watch it because of its badass feminist vibes. And Millie Bobby Brown and the
Helena Bonham Carter.
And Henry Cavill and the overall story and the mystery. Like, I haven't met a Sherlock Holmes that I don't love. So,
yeah.
And I mean that as like the overall brand, like the whole Holmes brand, like not just Sherlock Holmes. Like, I love everything to do with mysteries and the whole story of it all.
It's interesting though that you are okay with the repetition of that storyline, but not with the repetition of DC storylines, even though it's the same origin story over and over again.
Don't start. We're not talking about my disdain.
Should I not have pointed that out?
No.
Okay. Yeah. In my Sherlock, in my love for Sherlock, I would row it before. I would put it before. I don't know if that was a proper word. I would put it before, even before the Robert Downey Jr. movies. But I can't decide if I like Cumberbatch more than Enola. Just because it's modern And it's so kind of fucking weird at the same time that it just wants to keep you watching in a way.
It's true. Yeah, it's hard to rank them. I feel like I genuinely just kind of love them all fairly equally.
Yeah.
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 Yeah, that.
Yeah. But other than that, Enola Holmes, go watch it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I've got to say about Enola Holmes. Any last thoughts, Monica?
I have no thoughts. Today I don't have a lot of thoughts.
I know,
and when they come out, they're very confusing. So we've got to deal with that.
Agreed. So what we would love for you to do is actually, if you haven't left a review for Geek Herring yet, we would love if you hopped over to Apple Podcasts and left us a review. Reviews help the podcast get visibility. It lets us know that you're out there listening to us, which we know that you are because we've got wonderful people in chat. We've got wonderful people in Discord, but those reviews really do help the show grow and reach more people. So we'll drop the link for that in our show notes. And if you could just take a wee minute to do that, it would be wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That was such a British ask. Go fucking write us a review. We like you, we love you, and you love us too, so do it, period.
Yeah, that's what Monica said.
Could you please write us a review? It would be so nice. Please do it. Thank you. And we see you again next week for another awesome episode of Geek Herring.
Bye. If you like this episode of Geek Herring, why not leave us an iTunes review? You can also find us on social at Geek Herring and over on geekherring.com.
This show is brought to you by Dragon Powered Studio. Find more at dragonpoweredstudio.com.